96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drama on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. They are sworn to protect and serve, but does a proposal to fight the spike in D.C. crime give police too much power? And what's wrong with the D.C. crime plan proposed by Mayor Muriel Bowser? We're talking about it tonight and asking, how do you balance crime fighting and the safety of a community? My guests are Eugene Puryear. He's a D.C. activist with the Stop Police Terror Project. Seema Sadanandan, she's a criminal justice director for the ACLU. And Erica Totten, she is co-organizer of Black Lives Matter DMV. Lines are open. Give us a call if you have a question or a comment. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Thank you all for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let me first share something with you. We had an interview today with the D.C. Police Union Treasurer. He's also a spokesman, Greg Pemberton, about the mayor's plan. And one of the things that surprised us is that even though this plan suggests that the police have much more power than they have now, this is what he said.
Sounds as if the mayor wants to give powers that are normally dedicated to probation and parole agencies over to the police. And we think that's a pretty dangerous proposition. Parolees and probationers usually enter into an agreement to be released from prison or to avoid prison. And those agreements usually allow their parole or probation officer to, search their things, go through their homes, ask them some sort of invasive questioning to make sure that they're not, all continuing to commit crimes. And I think that if you give those same powers to the police, there's a lot really at stake there. One of the main things is just police community relations. I mean, how does it look to have uniformed MPD officers, just walking into somebody's home and looking through their drawers and under their bed?
Well, there you have it. Of course, a member of the D.C. Police Union, not liking the mayor's plan so much, obviously talking about Fourth Amendment illegal search and seizure issues. Seema, your thoughts not only about that comment, but the plan as a whole. And let's not even talk about the police cameras yet, because that's an issue that we are going to get to.
Well, I think that the plan purports to give the power to do searches on the homes of a certain class of returning citizens, not to the police, but to CSOSA, the parole and probation officers. The catch is that these supervision officers are not armed. So it doesn't make any sense to think that unarmed officers would actually enter into people's homes to search for weapons. And so necessarily the police department will have to provide an escort. And this is just not the role that supervision officers have historically played. They do have the right to do plain view searches, but they don't do the kind of searches that are as invasive or as what are being proposed here. I think the thing to realize is that we are in a state right now where there has been a rise in crime, and it is very visible and it's being dramatically felt in certain neighborhoods. And as a result, there's a lot of pressure on politicians to react with a solution. And it has been politically expedient over the past 30 years for politicians to react with tough on crime, even though in the long run, that just doesn't make our community safer. And in fact, will increase recidivism, increase the number of people entering into our criminal justice system and then exiting completely disenfranchised from their rights. So the warrantless searches are one aspect, but the plan as a whole proposes an entire platform that criminalizes returning citizens.
Eugene, do you think that the mayor is overreaching and feeling the pressure of trying to address the outcry from the citizenry?
Oh, I mean, I think, well, from a particular section of the citizenry, I think so for sure. I mean, I think that what you have is that there was a some people who were very concerned, thinking that the police were the answer. And you have a police chief who's driving public safety policy, who over the years has done unconstitutional things like the checkpoints in Trinidad, all hands on deck, the military occupation style policing. And if I could say one thing about what the police union said about community police relations, if you look for the past 5 years, 83% of all complaints made about the police at the Office of Police Complaints have been at least partially sustained. And so I think what you see here is a reticence by the police to enhance what they know is going on, because in D.C., the police often say, oh, well, we're not Ferguson, we're not Baltimore. And they see here with this wide legal gray area, which would open up a lot of space for their officers to potentially get caught doing something wrong, could pull the lid back on the fact that they haven't been exactly a benign force so far.
Erica, this plan has been called anti-black by some activists. Do you agree with that? And if so, why or why not?
Yeah, I absolutely do. Ultimately, Georgetown isn't safer because they have more police. They are wealthy, white, and resourced differently. So black communities are going to be the ones who are going to be targeted by these. And so we have returning citizens that are housed by their families. You ultimately are criminalizing an entire community, an entire family. Children will be traumatized by these searches. And it's similar to what happened with Ayanna Jones, or how she was murdered by police by a search. The police were searching for someone, went to the wrong address, and ended up shooting this 7-year-old black girl in the head. And so situations like this will continue to happen. The same thing would happen with Jason Goolsbee, who was profiled by police. And ultimately, situations like this are going to increase just by having more police out in the streets.
We want to mention that we did reach out to the Bowser administration to get a comment on this particular proposal and the pushback that it seems that she's been getting from all corners. Of course, we did not get a response.
But what does that say? That they give a response to the Washington Post, but not WHUR? I mean, I think at the end of the day, it shows that the Bowser administration knows that what they're doing is not only a slap in the face of the Black Lives Matter movement, but goes against even her own party, the Democratic Party, that has adopted into its platform policies or support for policies that are the exact opposite of what she's proposing.
Well, let's see what our listeners are saying. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lisa, calling from Southeast D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
You're welcome. I'm listening to the comments, and before I was against it. Now I'm sort of not. I am for it, so I'm 50-50. But to me, I see it as a welfare check, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the person, say, if they come into your house today and they check the scene, you have no gun, but it doesn't mean that they can't hide the gun in the neighbor's house and then bring it back tomorrow.
Hmm. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that one of the terms that's used, this idea of a search, isn't generally understood by the public. Now, when I go in, for example, to search in my daughter's room for my phone, which often goes missing, I might look under the clothes or look in the drawers. That's not what the execution of a search by officers looks like. Battering rams are typically used to break down the doors. Sometimes there's the use of flashbang grenades that are thrown through windows. These searches are conducted in the early morning hours in the presence of children. Children might be handcuffed, elderly people. People might get injured because of the mere escalation. And for people who live in Section 8 housing, for people who receive benefits, there are a number of limitations on who can be officially residing in that residence. For example, if you have a felony drug history, you may not be allowed to live in that residence. And so the mere execution of a search could result potentially in people losing their benefits, whether or not a gun is found, whether or not contraband is found, whether it's in the Section 8 context or in the public housing context.
But let me ask you, so let's say, for example, if I'm an ex-offender and I've served my time and maybe I've committed a violent crime, does that mean that if under this proposal, if I'm walking down the street minding my own business, that police could just arbitrarily just come up to me and put me up against the wall and rummage through whether it's my, you know, my pants, my bag, all of that? Is that the kind of thing that we're talking about?
Well, I mean, no, not as a result of Bowser's proposal, because the Supreme Court, unfortunately, has already allowed for those types of searches depending on the circumstances. The issue is here, too, with the use of this word violent. And it's important for folks to understand that when Bowser's administration, through the proposal, talks about violent crimes, they're talking about a statutory definition of violence. It may not necessarily comport with what people generally think of when they think of violence. Let me give you an example. A teenager on a bus slides a phone out of the person sitting next to them, out of their purse. That is a robbery, a felony charge, a crime of violence, which would be encompassed in this proposal. So when we say violent crime, this is a statutory definition of violence, not necessarily with force, with injury, or with a weapon.
Let me go back to the phone lines. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the D.C. mayor's crime plan, the proposed crime plan that is her answer to address the uptick in violence and homicides here in the district during the course of this summer. Let me go to Jay. Calling from D.C. Jay, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello, how you doing? Can you hear me?
Yeah, go right ahead.
All right, yeah, this is a totally bad idea because there's no clear thing. Now, you had the one person that was just on there said that if a person steals somebody's cell phone on the train or something, that's considered a felony and a violent crime. But when in the hood, we think about a violent crime is that you came along, you smacked somebody, you shot somebody, you did something you ain't got no business doing. You know, not as far as you stealing a cell phone. So if you run up on me as a cop, and I already served my time, already did my time, paid my taxes, paid my fines, and you just run up on me, want to handcuff me and harass me.
Okay. Jay, thank you so much. Let me have Erica respond to that. Is he right when he says that?
Absolutely. We see it every day. With jump outs, we see it with how young black children are out on the corner coming from school, just relaxing as any other neighborhood, and you have police continuously circling them, intimidating them, walking up on them for stupid stuff that kids do. And so ultimately, it's our children who are being targeted. So our city needs to be up in arms about this because our children that are most often perceived as more adult than they are going to be targeted and are going to be attacked the same way as we saw with Jason. That brutalization of this 18-year-old kid, it happens to black boys, it happens to black girls, it happens to men, women. It's going to continue happening, so we have to stand up.
You mentioned jump out squads, and several weeks ago we did have a police union official here, and they were talking about the pressure that's being put on police officers with what they call PR appearances after violent crimes, just kind of standing so that they can be seen to assure the community. But they're saying that they've been hamstrung by, for example, Chief Lanier, by not allowing them to be more aggressive in their policing of vice crimes, violent crimes, drugs, prostitution, and the like. And they're saying that is part of why we are seeing an uptick in crime in the city. Your thoughts about that?
I mean, I think it's totally spurious. I mean, when you look at the jump outs, which was the D.C. version, Stop and Frisk on Wheels, when we saw the analysis of Stop and Frisk in New York and other places, it was actually ineffective. And in fact, it was more likely sometimes that white people who were never getting stopped would have the contraband they were looking for than the black and Latino they were stopping in the literal millions. And so this entire idea of, you know, I call it shakedown policing, has never really been borne out by the facts. And I think you can see it as, you know, the police in D.C., most of the crimes they're doing are low level misdemeanor, drug offense type things. They're not all out here Inspector Clouseau solving murders, that kind of thing. And I think oftentimes this idea that the police promote is like, oh, well, if we can just do all these different things that we like to do by trying to say who we think is going to predict crime, it's not very effective statistically.
We need to take a break. As I mentioned earlier, we did reach out to the Bowser administration to hopefully address this information. We hope to speak with her administration soon on this issue. As we continue this conversation, please stay with us. If you're on the phone, the Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. Stay with us. More of this conversation in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network.